Welcome to the Greedy Little Podcast with me, Elizabeth Hodson. And this week we're talking pickles, which are very much in the culinary limelight. You can't get through 5 minutes of MasterChef without someone attempting to brine an unsuspecting onion. And later in this episode, I'll be talking to Nick Vidaz from the eponymous Pickle and Ferment Company. But first, I'm going to take you on a trip to pickle heaven. It's May 2003 and I've landed at Kansai Airport in Osaka, Japan for the first day of a year-long contract to teach English. I'd love to say this is the culmination of a long-held ambition to experience the sublime serenity of the tea ceremony and the majesty of the cherry blossom season, but it's not. I'm here because I'm obsessed with Japanese food. Top of my to-do list on landing is eat three fabulous things. But first, I have to find out where I'm going to be living for the next 12 months. I fish a scrap of paper out my bag with the address on it. It's in a place called Tengachaya. I somehow find the correct train, and luckily, the impeccably dressed staff don't tell me off for having the wrong ticket. Thank God. I'm massively jet-lagged and would probably cry. The train arrives at Namba Station, where I need to change for the underground. 45 minutes of trial and error later, I find the platform for the Brown Line, or Sakai Suji, as it's formerly known. The sun is shining on Tengachaya when I emerge from the subway. It's not quite the pristine land of kimono-clad geishas I'd conjured up in hazy imaginings back in Huddersfield, but it has a down-to-earth kind of quality which makes me feel a bit more at ease. On one corner opposite the station is a neon yellow Chinese restaurant, and next to it is a Lawson convenience store. I think I can spot a Domino's in the distance, but that could just be a mirage. I use a prepaid phone card to call Eddie and Jeff, who've been hired by the English school to take newcomers to their accommodation. "We'll be 10 minutes," says Jeff. "Get yourself some food. The Lawson's pretty good." The jet lag and 30-degree heat is taking its toll, but with the promise of food so close, I soldier on, and I'm glad I do. To Japanese people, Lawson is probably just a place to get a bowl of instant ramen and a new pair of tights, but to me, it's a shiny world of culinary opportunity. Before even stepping inside, I'm absolutely transfixed. There's an entire wall of vending machines outside the store. There's one offering six different sizes of beer, ranging from 100 mils to a litre, a can for all the family. Another sells pre-mixed whiskey and soda, and the one-cup brand of sake. It's only 11 in the morning, but I want to gulp down a one-cup just for the hell of it. I restrain myself, and instead go inside to be met by a treasure trove of fried noodle sandwiches, corn dogs, sushi, kimchi, and triangle upon triangle of rice balls. Delirious from tiredness and excitement, I grab a neatly packed tray of eel sushi, a rice triangle, and a bottle of what looks like cold green tea. I can't actually be sure, as my single word of Japanese is not beverage-related. "I see you've stocked up," says Jeff when he arrives in his Suzuki minivan at the appointed time. We drive through narrow streets where a mass of overhead cables are draped between a mishmash of wooden and concrete low-rise shops and houses. After a few minutes, the car stops at the end of a road, and Jeff carries my bags into the ground floor bedroom of a modest two-story house. The tatami mat flooring is new and smells of hay. Jeff leaves the front door key on the table, and the realisation hits me that this is it. This is my new life. I haven't slept for 24 hours, but the sun is pulling me back outside. I grab the bag of Lawson's food and wander around aimlessly until I come to a set of stone stairs. At the top is a tiny wooden building with a tiled roof. It looks like one of those shrines I've read about. There's a bell at the entrance, but I resist the instinct to ring it and instead sit outside on one of the benches. In daydream slow motion, I rummage around in the carrier bag and pull out one of the rice triangles. Unpeeling the plastic and folding the seaweed around the rice in the correct way requires a surprisingly dexterous manoeuvre, and when I finally manage to complete it, I bite through the crinkly dark green of the savoury parcel. And then it hits me, the vinegary, salty softness of the centre. I later find out it's umeboshi, which is pickled plum. It's a whole new level of pickled goodness, and I love it. I quickly discover a whole galaxy of tsukemono, preserved bits of whatever vegetable you fancy, and my love affair with Japanese food continues. Preserved foods are a feature of many cultures, not least those of Eastern European countries. Nick Vidaz, founder of the upmarket brand of pickled and fermented food, which carries his name, has Hungarian heritage and has been eating pickles ever since he can remember. But one of his best-loved products is the Korean kimchi. And I've been hooked on kimchi since trying it for the first time in Japan, so I was delighted to take part in a Zoom masterclass led by the maestro himself.
I've had kimchi going for a year and a half, 2 years. There's never been in the fridge, but I've kept it very cool and dark, and it's fantastic. Okay, wonderful.
After the class, I asked Nick why he thought that kimchi had become so popular in the more hipster corners of the UK.
You know, in Japan and Korea, it's a staple. It's just something people have with their food as a condiment. Here, it has become hip in the sense that it's got all those things, hasn't it? It's got chili, ginger, garlic. It's sour. It's sometimes sweet. It's got all that umami. It's fermented. So it ticks all the boxes for flavour. People are looking for those super condiments, you know. They want something new and dynamic and exciting.
But Nick, whose family emigrated from Hungary several generations ago, grew up with a more Eastern European sensibility when it comes to pickled food.
It's in my blood, so to speak. The brine is in my blood. I grew up with it. My dad was and still is a huge pickle fan. Every birthday and Christmas, we just knew what to buy him. It was a big jar of pickles. From when I remember, my earliest memories was eating pickles with every meal, whether it was a Hungarian perkolt or paprikash or piece of schnitzel or something. And you always had pickles on the side of one sort or another. Strangely enough, we used to cook with the sauerkraut. We never ate it raw. It's only recently, of course, that we realised that eating raw sauerkraut is probably quite good for your gut health and so on. We'd buy big jars of it and it would be rinsed out and in water because it was so salty and sour. I was determined not to make sauerkraut like that. I wanted to make sauerkraut that was ready to go. And so ours isn't as harsh or scary on the palate as the stuff I ate as a child.
How do you go from being a big fan of pickles and having it as part of your Hungarian heritage to then creating a business out of it?
Well, I was a chef for years and I always thought I'd like to get out of the kitchen and I'd like to try and make products instead, and pickles were the obvious choice. And we started off with, you know, just a little food stall at a market. We created lots of pickles for garnishes for the products. We were selling quesadillas at the time, little hand-pressed corn quesadillas, really authentic, really delicious. The pickles became more popular than the Mexican food. There was nothing like them in London. There was nothing out there similar. I was inspired by what was going on in the States. There's a real renaissance. I was really interested in it. And it was a very natural process. We started getting orders from restaurants, small delis and shops. That led to bigger places. We started supplying Leon back in the day, years ago.
One place where I've seen a lot of pickling is actually on TV and cooking shows like MasterChef, for example. They do seem to love doing a really quick pickle, often with red onion, but I did see someone do a really quick kimchi, which I was, you know, intrigued by. Has the culture of cooking shows fed into the pickle popularity, do you reckon?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think it's a real artisan skill, you know, and it's become very popular in the kitchens of across London and across the country, actually, yeah.
My mum told me stories of when she was growing up, actually in Grimsby, and her mum was Austrian, but also with Polish and Ukrainian heritage. And she said that they used to go down to some of the shops near the docks and there'd be big barrels of gherkins and garlic and so on. But she said she was the only girl in her school who ate things like pickled gherkins. But now it seems that it's kind of gone mainstream. So do you have that kind of that feeling of pride when you think that it's gone from being this kind of quite niche food? I'm guessing in London it was a little bit more popular, but it really has gone mainstream.
Well, yeah, but you know, I've got this saying, I tend to say it a lot. You know, we live in this world of Instagram and everything's accessible, but people still believe that they're doing something new. And of course, there's nothing new in the world, really. It's just about revisiting things. And these techniques have always been there, you know, have always been around. And these foods, of course, you look at wine, bread, beer, cheese, you know, they're all fermented. Craft beer, sourdough, all these movements towards artisan food has really come to the forefront of cooking, and it's just come round again, you know. But I'm proud to have kind of been the pioneer in this country in terms of bringing it to people's plates. Yeah, I'm very proud of that and my heritage and everything else. Yeah, absolutely.
And as for the kimchi I made in Nick's class, well, having kept it in my rather chilly bathroom for the last month, I popped it open the other day and it's one of the best I've tasted. I'll put that down to the recipe though, rather than the chef. Well, that's all for now, but if you've enjoyed listening, please subscribe to the Greedy Little podcast and post a review. And I'll be back again soon with another Greedy Little interview.